Welcome to the Peaceful Planet. This is your show host, Marcia McMahon, broadcasting live today from the BBS studios. And we hope you are having a wonderful Sunday afternoon. We have a wonderful program set up for you with our guest, Michael Sharp, Dr. Michael Sharp, as a matter of fact. And he has a wonderful book on ascension. We are beginning our ascension series. But before we go to that, I want to mention a couple of things. I know that many of us have been glued to our television sets, unable to perhaps get away from the, stop thinking about the suffering that's going on in the Middle East. And I have two very important messages, one from Mother Teresa and one from Princess Diana, that I'd like to read at the start of the show here, that will provide us, I think, with some much needed love and insight into the situation as it's unfolding. And we want to, of course, especially extend our sympathy, our love, and our light to that area of the world. And as light workers listening in, if you are a light worker, a peace worker, just tuning in for the first time, we ask you to send your goodwill and your good thoughts to that troubled area of Israel, Gaza, and southern Lebanon, all of which are experiencing war and bloodshed and death at this moment. You know, we can't move up into the ascension energies until war is cleared from the planet. So Princess Diana has given some very specific diplomatic, I might say, solutions to the situation through me and my book, With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts. And I wouldn't normally be bringing up the book or her messages were it not for the situation becoming so serious. But I really felt that she wanted me to share this message with our listening audience. And I want you to remember that I myself am not a particularly political person, and I don't have a political stand on this issue particularly, so much as I feel that her solutions are diplomatic, and to hear these words with an open mind and heart. And then we want to also invite our listeners to call toll-free if you would like to receive a little mini reading by me, or perhaps Dr. Michael Sharp, he does readings too. And our toll-free number for comments, questions for him, or readings would be 877-876-5227. And I want to remind you that our music is synthesized from spirit through the mediumship of Robert Murray, and you were recently listening to a tune by John Lennon and George Harrison, and that was called Blanket of Love. And so it would be nice to think that that song, Blanket of Love, is extending into the areas of the Middle East right now. So let's meditate on peace for that area as we open our hearts and minds to hear from Princess Diana in this special message today. Diana's speaking here. She says, there are indeed so many fires worldwide, but especially the Middle East. But of course, speaking of fires, we send our love also to those in California put out of their homes. We, in spirit, are concerned about the escalating tensions with the situation in Gaza and now in Lebanon. We find it extremely unfortunate that Hamas and Hezbollah chose to continue agitations against Israel, and now Israel is poised to attack cities in Lebanon, whilst Lebanon has targeted Haifa. With the potential loss of life in the millions on all fronts, it would behoove the United States to get proactive and do something to stop this senseless war. The U.S. must create an atmosphere of support for these democracies, which are forming in all Arab countries. Meanwhile, your president gives lip service to Israel's right to defend herself, whilst I cannot argue that more be done and must to save innocent children within Israel, Lebanon, and Gaza. If the two-state solution is ever going to be, and I won't give up channeling these messages of peace and light until it is, then we as allied nations, meaning the U.S. and Britain, must adhere to the roadmap for peace before it is entirely too late for the planet. Marcia, you mean this is serious war then if Israel attacks Lebanon and Lebanon attacks Israel? Bear in mind this was channeled earlier this week. Diana speaking, the real issue is so complicated. Iran backs all of these horrible terror squads within these Arab governments, thereby undermining the moderate voices like the honorable man, President Abbas of Palestine. Iran is doing all this behind the scenes. She is doing this to undermine Israel's outright aggression of the past few weeks upon innocent Palestinians. And whilst I have spoken volumes through my channel about this one issue, in parentheses, Palestine, needing solved, we must as a world unite in love and brotherhood. This buildup of hate could actually end up undermining all of Israel. For indeed, we see intentions in spirit, and the Iranian president has intentions of a nuclear holocaust upon Israel. Let me be clear here. We do not take sides in spirit, but rather take sides toward solving differences before they occur to ensure the continuation of the human race. We are doing our part to stop the spread of terror everywhere. Just yesterday, we saw the horror of another terror attack upon the innocent people of Mumbai, formerly known as Bombay. We are horrified at these acts of terror, but they serve to underline the importance that all peace workers and light workers of this world must know, that you are responsible for creating a world of love, brotherhood, and beauty, and justice for all. Take back your governments around the world from the dictators of hate, from the extremists of any religion, and from those who spout hate, for all hate must end if we are to continue in the human endeavor. I am closing shortly. We ask the United States Diplomatic Corps to show courage and take a stand against all military aggression and work with Israel, Lebanon, and the Palestinians to create a way out of this dilemma. If these steps are not taken, the horrific consequences to Israel and Lebanon will be felt throughout the world, and more terror everywhere will erupt, including your beloved country, America. I send my love to all light workers and peace workers and ask you to do your part, however humble. My love, Diana, Princess of Peace to the Nations. So she's pointing out that the two-state solution between Israel and Palestine would have provided an end to the continuing suffering of the Palestinians and the continuing conflict. Now the conflict is escalating, so again, we ask all peace workers and light workers, if you can do nothing more than just simply send your love and light to that region and pray for peace, you could also think about sending an email to a congressman. Go to www.congress.org. You can, there you can find whomever your representative is if you're in the United States, and write them an email and ask them to do more diplomatically so that this can be prevented, so outright escalation. And again, I try not to take sides. I realize that both, all these parties have differences of opinion, and we're, of course, respectful of all parties concerned and affected, but we of the BBS network are not particularly a political station. We're a spiritual station, but nonetheless, these messages couldn't be more appropriate for this time period in which we live, because we as light workers must solve these problems if there is to be a new earth and a new age of ascension. So I had another message from Mother Teresa, but I know I'm running into time here, and if we have time, perhaps at the end of the show, I'll read that. I would like to, again, welcome our very special guest, Dr. Michael Sharp. Michael, are you there with us?
I'm here.
Wonderful. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you just great now.
Okay, good. And I'd like to read your introduction, your bio, before we go into your wonderful work. We're going to be looking at Michael's book, The Book of Life, Ascension and the Divine World Order. And I know a lot of you who listen in to BBS Network have heard probably a few shows on Ascension. Perhaps you've heard Carolyn Evers' work with Ascension. She's been my guest on my show a couple of times and now has her own show. She has some marvelous work. Dr. Michael has some wonderful work. And I want to read to you a little bit about his background. He says here, as above in consciousness, so below in matter, he went from being an academic to a mystic, and boy, can I relate to that. I am also an academic and teach art history for a college. Michael has, since a young child, been interested in spiritual things. However, up until a few years ago, his interest was largely peripheral to his more worldly concerns. He was born Catholic and received a traditional education in the Catholic school system, went on to earn a traditional PhD from a large Canadian university where he has focused on traditional academic things. Eventually completed his academic training with undergraduate degrees in both psychology and sociology and a PhD in sociology. His study and work as a sociologist made him aware of the form and nature of injustice, poverty, and inequality in the world. As a sociologist, he understood the limitations of a world political system and the way these systems are set up to a privileged few while exploiting the many. So To make a long story short, Michael Sharp went from curious, agnostic, and primarily materialist to mystic messenger in a little less than 4 years. While the awakening was gradual for the first 2 years, the process kicked into high gear for him after he resolved some of his deeper past life fears. Shortly after he successfully resolved the Catholic propagated fear of damnation and deeper fears of tragic sacrifice, he began his career as a mystic. One day, he simply sat down at the computer and the ideas began to flow. Some of the ideas were familiar to him in this incarnation, but some were totally outrageous when compared against traditional scientific or church canon. The very first thing that issued forth from his pen was a completely revised story of creation that revealed truths about this universe and our role in it that had either never been revealed on this earth before or had long been suppressed to prevent our collective awareness of the true nature of the earth. The poem entitled The Song of Creation is available on his website. And again, we want to reference Mike's website at www.michaelsharp.org/Genesis if you would like to read the Song of Creation. And now I'd like to formally bring you into our discussion and talk about the Book of Life, the Ascension, and the Divine World Order. It was a marvelous and captivating read, to say the least, Michael, and I would say that since you've just had your awakening in the last couple of years, you've done an awful lot of work and research here.
Well, it's most of this stuff is either channeled or brought forward from stuff that I know from in past lives. So the research is pretty easy.
Very good. Well, that's the first thing that occurred to me, because although it doesn't specifically state that you're channeling this information, it's written in a very authoritative voice, and I, as a channel, instantly recognized that it was channeled. If it wasn't that channeled, then would you say this was channeled from your higher source, your monadic source, or is there a particular guide that helped you write the book?
It really depends on what I'm writing and the time period. I mean, with a book like the Book of Life, in fact, with all my books, I'm dealing with multiple entities. I'm dealing with my own higher self, which is, you know, very knowledgeable, but I'm also dealing with different people depending on the book. You know, so for the book that I'm writing, that I just wrote on tarot, I was dealing with Saint Germain, for example, and a couple of other people. But for the Book of Life, it was different people.
Oh, okay. So you don't identify the source, and I guess what you did is you wrote it in an authoritative way, but you never reveal it or state that this is so and so speaking or this is my higher source speaking. So it doesn't become a stumbling block, because I know because I'm channeling, or I write through Princess Diana's writing through me, and I'm her scribe. Because she was a world figure and she's recently deceased, I have no choice. I have to give her credit. Everybody knows who she is, and they would instantly recognize her British accent and everything else, you know. So the personality is, in this case, coming through. But in your work, it's a little more subtle, and I think maybe the average reader who isn't familiar with channeling wouldn't necessarily pick up on that for a while, and it would be less of a threat, perhaps, to them. So it's pretty clever the way you put that together there, Michael.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I get, I never send the stuff out without kind of vetting it first. Because when you channel, there is a possibility that you end up with messages that aren't probably, they're inserted. You know, they're not, this wouldn't happen with you and Diana probably because you're close. But when I'm dealing with, you know, entities on different entities on a regular basis, it becomes easier to insert, you know, a negative message. And one of the things that I say is that there's a lot of truth out there in the world religions and in the philosophies and everything, but it tends to get corrupted, and it's often just a little sentence here or there that can take something that's very uplifting and make it into something that's oppressive. So I'm very cautious when I'm writing, that when I finally write this stuff and when it finally goes on paper, finally, that it's actually me saying that I've taken everything that I've learned and shaped it in a way that I'm certain it's not going to be misinterpreted, or that it's not, there's not a corruption, or there isn't a little piece of falsehood that has crept in there, that somebody, you know, who's more interested in continuing with systems of privilege and power can use to then beat people down. So it's a different process, you're right.
Well, when you say things are vetted, I'm taking it to mean that you just do a lot of editing yourself and that you go over everything with a fine-tooth comb before you actually publish it, or
That's
you
right,
rewrite
yeah.
it into your own words. Is
That's
that
right.
what you're meaning?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I mean. Yeah.
And I thought that your book was very, very informative, because you know, you revisit, for instance, in Chapter 3, previous attempts, Lemuria and Atlantis, which, you know, frankly, other than Shirley MacLaine in her book The Camino, which was probably the first or second book that I had read about Lemuria and Atlantis, you know, there just isn't a lot of available information aside from channeled information, because the rest of it is, it's only in the Akashic records now, or the heavenly records, because the records are gone. So, you know, I had only encountered it in a couple other books, and, you know, there's differing information out there about it. So, obviously, you know, you're on to some very interesting stuff here, and, you know, it was my impression anyway, if we can talk about Lemuria and Atlantis for a little bit. Are you open to discussing those two cultures?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm just kind of curious. With Lemuria, in many of the channelings I've read, particularly I'm thinking of Carolyn Evers, but, you know, not quoting her specifically. So, Carolyn, if you're listening, please forgive me if I say something that maybe you didn't say, but I've read a lot of her work and a lot of other channel work. I get the impression with Lemuria that it was a very ethereal existence, that we were here in spirit before we actually had physical form. And that also the impression I got from Lemuria is that it was kind of an idyllic, that was the so-called Garden of Eden, that was the place where, that was the continent, if you will, that was in the Pacific Ocean where Hawaii is now, and it was sort of a pristine, beautiful place where all kinds of wonderful miracles happened on a daily basis, and we were in our original creation as God intended it. But then what happened with that, I guess, is my question for you.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't say that Lemuria was localized in Hawaii, although that would be part of the civilization. I'd think that a lot of the genetic line that hails from Lemuria, that's where it is now, that they've kind of settled there to wait for things to happen. But and I also would say I'd agree with you that, that Lemuria was a very spiritual place, but not in an etheric sense, just in a sense where a lot more of our monadic consciousness was in the body at that point.
Uh-huh.
We were much more ourselves in Lemuria, and that was the problem, because, as I explained in the Book of Life, you know, this ascension thing, what we're really trying to do is, it's a physical process where we're trying to kind of lift up matter and pump more energy into the molecules and make it respond more to thought. Matter responds to thought as above in consciousness, so below in matter. But at this level of existence, it's very thick and crystalline. It's a crystallized universe, right? It's or at least where we live anyway. It's solid at this level of matter. So the idea here is to pump energy in and kind of make everything more malleable and make a better playground for spirit, where we can get things that we want and do the things that we want without so much difficulty. So
yeah,
how you do that?
War and
well,
conflict and all these political things and interfering and human life, you know.
Sure,
poverty,
but that's part of it, actually. So the problem in Lemuria was that we couldn't generate the energy. In order to generate this energy, what you basically have to do is build a big magnet, a big energy generator. And if anybody knows anything about energy generators, you basically take two opposing poles, positive and negative, right, and spin them around a central core, a magnet, and then you generate electricity like this. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're organizing our consciousness into two opposing poles of us and them, black and white, male and female, and then just going at it, right, and playing off each other. And as we're seeing now in the Middle East, when you do that, you generate an awful lot of energy. But the problem in Lemuria was that we couldn't take it seriously enough to generate the energy. It was, you know, the kind of stuff that's happening on Earth right now would have been inconceivable in Lemuria, because we would have laughed at it. Oh, you mean, you know, the idea of taking this duality and this opposition and this good and evil and this left and right seriously, we couldn't do it. We all knew we were connected. We all knew we were part of a big family spirit. We all knew we were God consciousness, and you just couldn't take it seriously. So Lemuria was kind of, it wasn't ended, but it was that particular creative constellation of consciousness was ended, and we decided we'd have to pull ourselves away from the body a little bit and insert a veil, I call it in my new book and in the book of life, a veil over our consciousness, so that we didn't know who we were. We didn't know we were connected to God and spirit. We didn't know that there was this bigger universe, so we were kind of isolated on this earth. And then from that perspective, and this is where Atlantis comes in, you know, we were able to play in duality and generate the energy and do all the stuff that we needed to do to...
It's my understanding or impression that with Atlantis, anyway, that we were much more similar to where we are now, in that we had the duality in full play. The male and the female came along in Atlantis, and then also a political system of some sort was in place. And my impression was that we had our energy centers or chakras fully activated so that we had the power of thought, and then that is what went awry with Atlantean.
Oh, that's right. And what happened basically is that we were able to generate a lot of energy under those conditions. And then what basically happens is you generate a lot of energy. It's like you build up a keg of dynamite, and then you light the fuse. And in order to do that, lighting the fuse means connecting your kundalini, lighting up the chakras, and activating your body. When you do that, that kind of sends vibrations of energy out to the world. It's very boom, boom, boom. You know, you can have a major impact on things around you when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem then, though, was that we were doing this while we were still sleeping and beneath the veil. So we had this duality consciousness, this us and them, and we were raising, we didn't know what we were doing, but what we were doing was raising the energy in the environment. And then when we stepped into our power, we were taken off guard, because at that point, the duality that was in our consciousness exploded into the world. And you see what's happening, the kind of thing that's happening now, happening back then, where, you know, opposing political systems and opposing ideologies, all this stuff just started to just smash up against each other.
Well, you know, I find it very interesting, the parallels between now and Atlantis. And although I have not really remembered any of my lifetimes in Atlantis, I've read plenty of books by Edgar Cayce, for instance, describing Atlantis, and some of Carolyn Ever's work, to know that what was going on then was quite a bit similar to what we have now, and that there were some warring factions, and some of these people took power into their own hands and decided they were going to destroy China. And I guess what happened is that they had a crystal back then in Atlantis that basically was their source of energy, and it had these positive-negative poles, as you describe it. And some of the scientists that they had then apparently wanted to point the crystal at China or destroy China or something to that effect, and it had a reverse effect on them, which caused the sinking of the whole continent. Now, this is actually documented for those of you skeptics out there listening in the audience. It is documented in Plato's writings, and he talks about it, and he talks about the breaking up of Atlantis and the mud and the things that were in the Atlantic Ocean. So there are references in history to Atlantis, and then many people feel that the Egyptian civilization had its origins actually in the Atlantean civilization. So there is some incidental and not to be dismissed lightly evidence for the existence of the Atlantean continent and for the mistakes that they had made. So I don't know, you know, I want to say this: when we're facing these world issues that could actually end up in some kind of nuclear strife, it is a very frightening thought, and I think it's very difficult for us, those of us that are on the path of enlightenment and pursuing our ascension, to stay focused on maintaining the ideal, anyway, of a peaceful world of brotherhood, unity, and love, which is promised as a part of our ascension and our Earth is ascending. It's hard to see beyond these mad dictators like Kim Jong-il and some of these others, and this conflict in the Middle East, to see beyond this to peace. And so I wonder, in your writing, it's very authoritative that we are going to make it to ascension and the planet is going to make it. And I'm always working on that, because my issue in particular with Diana focuses on world peace solutions in the Middle East. And she says that if they will create the state of Palestine and do other diplomatic measures, that the two-state solution will restore the essence of the core grievance behind all this terror and eventually put an end to it. But, you know, we are facing some unprecedented things in our world today. So I was wondering what you could share with us about bringing us up to date. We know we failed in Atlantis. We know we failed in Lemuria. Give me your insights on that, Michael, if you can. I know it's a big subject.
The reason why we failed in Lemuria wasn't because nobody wanted to. nobody wanted to wake up, or nobody wanted to complete the process. It's just because we didn't wake up fast enough, and we didn't, you know, the problem was we just didn't know we had to. We didn't realize that, because we'd never gone through that before, that when we did this process, that, you know, things were going to blow up in our faces, basically. So this time around, we've installed some, I guess you would call it, checks and balances that prevent the prevent individual activation before full power activation, before you've kind of emerged out of that duality consciousness. So as long as you exist in duality, and as long as you're buying into all this good and evil stuff, mm-hmm. you can't activate. There's, and it's not that somebody's preventing you; it's that you've accepted some locking mechanisms that prevents you from doing that. So that's one of the checks. One of the other safeguards is that we've trained light workers and other people who are especially trained in waking people up and who can do mm-hmm. it with facility. And if you come across one of these people, even if you're locked into the 3D world of daily work and everything else, you're impacted by these people just because they're so good at what they do. And these people are all everywhere on Earth right now.
That is true. And you know, I love your insight in your book about, you know, we as light workers and what we're doing on the internet. I think the light work, the channeled messages, the angel messages, the many, many websites of light, creating a web of light really throughout the world. BBS is a big part of that, you know, but it is, even as I'm saying these words, I'm getting this wonderful feeling of love and light washing over my person. So I know that, you know, just by speaking these words of grace and light and healing and peace, we're opening the potential for the possibility for this to one day manifest in our world. And there are many people the world over, regardless of religion, that are tuning into these messages of light and realizing that maybe spirituality is the way to access a more of a oneness with mankind, and not adhering so much to the dogmas of these religions that really, I think religion is a big part of the problem on the planet right now, especially in the Middle East, but almost everywhere.
Well, I wouldn't absolve the Catholic Church of responsibility. I mean, their crusades were involved. They were involved in the Middle East and destruction.
You know,
of
when
culture
you think
there.
How many people that were women that were burned at the stake, I think the number given by Archangel Michael was 3 million women senselessly burned at the stake for having psychic powers. Come on now, you know. So the
Catholic
Church.
That's interesting, though. That time in history was a time when we were part of the experiment. We were at that point we were going to extend the planet,
mm-hmm.
and the powers that be, the Catholic Church and others, you know, basically did everything in their power to. I mean, if you and I lived back there, we would already have been burned at the stake, you know.
Oh, I know.
Because
and I often wonder in my work if something's going to happen, but Spirit told me it would not.
Not in this lifetime, but you know, we did go through that in previous lifetimes in preparation mm-hmm. for this lifetime. You know, mm-hmm. part of the practice runs and stuff like that. You're right.
Spontaneous awakening, Michael. If I might explore that a bit with you. Your guides came in with messages. You started channeling this information. It was one book after another. If I may ask, are you still somewhat involved in your academia, or have you severed ties with that and doing your light work?
No, I'm still very involved academically, and I'm actually trying to bring the two together. There's areas...
Uh-huh, because that's what I'm trying to do, and I'm very interested in that, because I find that about half the people I speak with in academia are so fascinated with my work with Diana and want to know more. But I still find, as you correctly point out in your book, that the people in the positions of power will still not let me speak on this message. You know, for instance, if I wanted to give a talk to the college about it, it would be sort of But individually, I'm reaching other colleagues. So you feel you're reaching other colleagues with your work.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. some of them. I mean, I do meet academics all the time, and you know, doctors. Mm-hmm. I have a friend in India who's, you know, a former atomic energy scientist, and you know, another who's a software engineer. So there are people reaching out to this, but by melding the two, I've kind of got interested in this area of consciousness research, which is kind of with academics looking at the impact of consciousness on the world and what's the nature of consciousness and stuff like that. And as far as I'm concerned, the stuff that I've written is a long way ahead of them, but at the same time, they're still moving in that direction. So I find that's an area where I can where I can go and contribute and read stuff and go, yeah, this is just fascinating stuff. So that might be something for you to look at if you're interested in finding a way to talk about this stuff without talking about this stuff.
Well, you know, for a while I kept fairly quiet about it in my profession, but as I opened up and I got the radio show, I was more verbal about it, and I have not found a great deal of resistance in the academic. I'm in two academic communities though now, so, you know, I mean, you know, it isn't always a comfortable position to be in. I can tell you honestly that that's the case, but I do find people are extremely curious about Princess Diana, and that is always kind of a way to break the ice about it. And then when they ask me what the book is about, I just say, well, it's her humanitarian endeavor, which it is. It's channeled in information. She's continuing her humanitarian endeavor from heaven, you know. But it seems to me that we as light workers have to infiltrate as many areas of society as we can, and that we need to help to awaken. I think I was told by, I think it was Archangel Michael at one point, that I was, you know, even in my body and even in my conversations with students, that I was helping to bring light to the situation, that I was helping in some way. So, you know, I take that to understand that I'm having whatever small impact I can in my own community. And then, when of course, when we can air these thoughts publicly on radio stations and so on, do interviews with your work and my work, this actually has a more far-reaching effect, I think, because I know BBS reaches around the world, and we may have people tuning in for the first time. We may have people coming back. So, you know, I think that the Internet, as you well stated in your book, is definitely a web of light and definitely an outlet for all of our enlightenment work, as it were, and it's going to continue to expand that way till, I think, until the world becomes liberated of a lot of the problems that it's still, you know, still oppressed by at this point in time. So, you know, I commend you for your great work. I think your book is really interesting, and I'd like to touch on some other things. You talk about in Chapter 7 your own personal ascension process and how important it is for each of us to connect with our family of guides and being of service and nutrition. I had to totally agree with you on nutrition and the body. That's an important point you brought up about being vegetarian. So I take it that you're also a vegetarian, correct?
I'm not a vegetarian.
Oh, you're not. Okay,
no,
you talked about eating less meat then, right?
Yeah, I would love to. We're actually pushing in that direction, but it's difficult. We find it difficult because even the cooking shows are all there are no vegetarian cooking shows. So I think that will change over time, you know. But right now, vegetarians are in the vanguard.
Well, I'm vegetarian for the most part, you know, the soy burgers are the way. I noticed drinking soy milk and eating soy burgers made me feel a whole lot lighter, so I've just stayed with it. It feels better. You know, so I thought that was an important thing. You talk also about, you know, one's ascension process. So if you could go into a little bit about maybe chakra activations and what that'll do for you and how you achieve that kind of thing, maybe you could, you know, elaborate a bit on that.
Sure. Well, this is elaborated in a lot of detail in this, in the next book, in Dossier and the Ascension, where I talk, I give a chakra meditation called the Great Invocation, which is a very simple, you know, 10-second chakra meditation, visualization that you can do driving to work. And then I also talk about, you know, what's going to happen when you do that, because most of us walk around with, or until we go through this process, we walk around with our chakras are closed, and they're closed by the ideas that we carry, which are, you know, which basically teach us that we're powerless, insignificant, blah, 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 blah. But the ideas, I mean, you can activate your chakras in spite of those ideas by just visualizing. So what will happen, though, when you do that, is that all the, any issues that you've got buried, anything in your subconscious, anything that you haven't dealt with, any fears that you have from this life or past life, all these things that are in your mind begin to manifest in the world around you with a lot of efficiency, right? And this can be very scary for some people who can kind of, you know, they'll do the Great Invocation or a similar meditation, and then things will start happening, and they won't know why, but they'll get scared, and then they'll back off, right? So in Dossi of the Ascension, I talk a lot about what can happen, how to deal with that, and how to control it so that you're not turned off of the activation. You can actually get through all the issues and come emerge on the other side with a fully activated chakra system. And that's not ascension, but that's, you know, kind of the groundwork for it. You have to be in a position of power before you can start having an impact in terms of ascension on the world around you. So, but a lot of detail in the second book, not so much in the first book where it's kind of just introduced.
Well, I'll have to read that book and have you on again then, because that sounds like someplace that we'd like to go. We're doing an entire ascension series here on the Peaceful Planet, trying to be of service to other light workers and others who are curious about this term ascension. And it's sure bantered about quite a bit these days, and a lot of people have various ideas. And, you know, I've read in different messages from Archangel Michael that about 50% of all the channelings that you read about ascension are just about worthless. But I thought your stuff was really very astute, if you will. And it may be that academic background that you have, that attention to detail, clarity, whatever. I thought it was very good. I know the Earth itself is ascending, and Diana has pointed out that the Earth really needs to be cleared of these wars and areas of violence, and that she has said that there will be further cleansings relative to the number of these kinds of places, because they form sort of packets of negativity and areas of gray where this has to be cleared, and it causes more earth changes to occur. I was wondering if you could connect a little bit about what your guides have been telling you about earth changes, or do you get that kind of prophetic information at all?
I don't, and I know that there will be more of them, but it's not really my gig or my thing to go into that kind of prophecy stuff. You know, what I like to emphasize is that a lot of this stuff is all, it's all up in the air, and none of the stuff, earth changes, any of that stuff has to happen. If, mm-hmm. you know, if we could turn a light bulb on and wake everybody up in the world right now, you know, none of that stuff would have to occur. So, you know, my message is really wake up now, mm-hmm. because
yeah.
we need to.
And I want to emphasize that message is so profoundly important. And nothing could be more important than to get people to wake up to the spiritual dimensions, which I believe that's what you're saying ascension is being fully awake and aware of one's set of personal guides, being aware of one's past life, being aware of the angels that watch over you, and being able to instantaneously connect with those guides in a state of perhaps emergency, so that you know where to go when things start to really go haywire, which inevitably they do at one point or another. I'm not saying it's going to happen to everyone or that there's going to be massive cataclysm for the earth, but Diana has said that if these areas of war aren't cleared, then there will be natural cleansings, meaning that there will be, you know, inundation with water or fires or something to that effect to naturally clear these areas, because they're interfering with the earth herself. And granted, we've also got the issues of global warming and the greenhouse gases effect, and that is certainly not helping matters when it comes to enormous numbers of floods and enormous numbers of fires and that kind of thing. So what I'm connecting with here is the idea of the Earth's ascension, and our personal ascension is important to work on in this lifetime. Tell me a little bit, or share a little bit of insight, if you would, also about the new children that are coming in.
Indigos and crystals, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're actually pretty important. They're kind of, especially the crystals who are now coming in, and, you know, they're, I think, between the ages of 8 and 0 and 8, so there's a lot of crystal children coming in, and in the next few years, we'll be able to start communicating with them, and they're kind of the, I'm not sure how to describe it, they're the if you've ever been to a football game or one of the big stadiums, you see the big lights on the top that they throw up a lot of light. They're like those lights. They're the ones that they're kind of all sleeping right now, but they're the ones that when you throw the switch on them, darkness on this world is going to dissipate. It's like it's literally going to crumble. They're not active right now, but they're part of the staged ascension process that we're going through now, where we have activations and awakenings, and then, you know, this the SIL piece puts in place, and so we take a step forward there, and now those pieces put in place, so then we take a step forward, and crystal children are part of that, a very powerful part of that.
There are children that seem to be born with activation. They're already psychically aware, that kind of thing.
But not in their full power. I mean, they are very some of them are more than others. But you know, even the ones that you're seeing, I can think of two or three who are fully activated. But most of them aren't. Most of them are in some minor degree of activation, and they will all start coming online in the next few years, right? And that's going to have a fairly big impact on the world. But before they can start coming online, we've also got to. The rest of us, the adults in the world, have to reach a certain point, because if we don't, then their coming online will cause a lot of distress and other stuff that we want to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a very
careful... Well, that only makes sense. So the idea is to really have a mass awakening, and it is being aided by books like yours and books like mine and everybody that's working for the light and for the good of humankind. This is your chance to step forward now. This is the time. Now is the time. And it could be and will be a very glorious and grand time, I think, for all of us. But it's my understanding that this unfolds over the course of about 1,000 years, the so-called promised 1,000 years of peace.
No. it's going to unfold over the next 20 years or so. It's going to be very quick.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. But it is supposed to enter into the 1,000 years of peace. So.
Well, and I think 1,000 years is a metaphor. It'd probably go on a lot longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
Before we kind of get bored with conditions and think we got to do something else. But, yeah, I think most of it's going to happen very quickly over the next 20 years. And I think you can already see it happening if you look at things like some of the technological advances that they're making now are really, really, you know, the utopian technologies. They have South Africa has a new, what do they call them, solar panel that's cheap to make and highly efficient. You know, this basically brings solar power to the masses, this thing, and solves the world's energy problems. The battery, the Russians have a battery that is recharged on star power. You know, these are in the mainstream media. You can find these.
We certainly need a few good solutions, you know, even beyond the hybrid, you know, in order to stop polluting the environment.
The hybrid's nothing. The hybrid is a car that, you know, the oil companies are using to maintain their dominance. There's technologies available that can replace even that right now. And so you've got these utopian technologies and these little intimations of a world of spirit starting to pop up, and they're popping up faster every day. So, and as we kind of progress with it, that's going to start happening a lot more, where we'll see really positive developments, but we'll also see this duality kind of swinging back and forth and threatening to blow the world up. But at some point, that duality and the people who run that are all going to start to lose power, and it's all going to kind of start dissipating. You'll see it. You'll see the institutions start to crumble.
And I had the thought a few weeks ago when Kim Jong-il let off that missile that, you know, I mean, why doesn't spirit just, you know, take him and allow him to, you know, go to the other side so we don't have this kind of... You know, I mean,
well,
not that I wish
reason,
any harm on
the
it,
reason
but
why spirit doesn't take him is because there are people in the world who call for that. There's a lot of people out there who still live in duality. So,
mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, all this guy doing...
So supported by the consent of the masses, basically.
Well, we're all spirit. So it's, you know, as long as there's... It's why awakening is so important. As long as people live in duality, we're going to call into being leaders like that who play one side of that duality and play it well, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, as we progress here in the energy environment, it's going to become the reality of this is going to become a lot more stark. And the end result of this, which is destruction of the planet, you know, becomes more and more of a possibility. And I don't think that's going to happen,
exactly.
But it's definitely a fear that we're working with right now.
Yeah. Well, we definitely can't let that happen. And the more light we put out there, the better off we're all going to be. That's for darn sure. I want to mention your website and mine before we go. We're already at time. Again, we've been discussing and had a fascinating discussion here with Dr. Michael Sharp. He's the author of The Book of Life, Ascension and the Divine World Order. It's, by the way, I want to compliment you on the cover of the book, which is phenomenal. You've got this kind of holographic diagram of a tube of color shooting out a person in a white light that's sitting and meditating inside of a Merkaba. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and the Merkaba is the Ascension activation. So those of you that want to tune in and turn on to Ascension and learn more about it, I would highly recommend you pick up his book and your website. Could you repeat your website for us?
Yeah, it's www.michaelsharp.org.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Michael Sharp. And I want to mention my website, and we may have time for another message if my producer doesn't get on and say it's time. My website, featuring messages from Mother Teresa and Princess Diana, and a beautiful Ascended Master art gallery and messages from the Ascended Masters, is www.dianaspeakstotheworld.com. And we want to send our love and our light out there to the people of the Middle East, but especially to the diplomats, and ask that the angels to influence their thoughts and minds and emotions so that a peaceful solution to this crisis can be negotiated on all sides. And we pray and hope for a more peaceful planet and a more peaceful solution to some of the problems in the world, which we'll be exploring on the Peaceful Planet. This is your show host, Marcia McMahon, and we thank you for listening to our interview on the Peaceful Planet, and we encourage you to visit these two websites. And on the close, before we play the song by John Lennon, I'm going to read Mother Teresa's message, and then we will play the song titled The Peaceful Planet. We want to encourage you to visit Bob Murray's website, where you can hear the music being produced by John Lennon and George Harrison in spirit at www.thestarstillshine.com. Thank you very much, Bob, for providing this music. And here is a brief message from Mother Teresa about the situation in the Middle East that I wish to share with you and hope you find it uplifting. This is Mother Teresa. I am saddened by the war and the bombs falling from the sky on both the Israelis and the Lebanese. Many years ago, I was able to go to Lebanon to aid the orphans who were innocent victims inside a circle of fire, which Israel had been targeting. Through my intervention, we were able to stop war and move the orphans, who were also handicapped. For this, I was given some award or other. It moves me to see the same area being targeted again. I want to assure our readers that I do not take sides in these conflicts. In life, I did not take sides and was not political. But from here, we see the daily sufferings of the Palestinians. We see the horrible deeds of the dark that commit acts of terror also. Those who commit these acts of unspeakable terror and kidnapping are not invited to our part of heaven. No, they will not be welcome in the future earth, which is being prepared for a divine banquet, and Jesus himself will usher in the new age of man and woman. While we all want the millennium to be one of peace, forgiveness, and brotherhood, we see that the religious hatred in the Middle East is a profound stumbling block to the oneness that could be. Meanwhile, innocent children of God of all faiths are made to suffer. We ask all to pray for peace of any religious persuasion, and we ask especially the Christians to ask God to give them peace and strength to bear what is coming. We, as guides to humanity, want the problem solved. If the world had read your words with Diana, the greatest of peacemakers, they would have been provided a solution to the dilemma facing everyone the world over. That the creating of a homeland for the Palestinians would have prevented all of this suffering. It is the way of the world that they ignore their greatest teachers, and in this case, most unfortunate. At this time, I leave you and our readers in the divine grace of our Creator God. He will watch over you with the wings of a dove. With love and prayers for peace, Mother Teresa. Well, what a beautiful message, and I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. I encourage you to send me an email if you have a question for a reading at dianaspeaks at hotmail.com. This is show host Marcia McMahon. We're signing off, and we're now going to play The Peaceful Planet by John Lennon, George Harrison, through Bob Murray. Thank you again for joining us.